English fella lived next door. This packy had a goose. He laid egg in his garden. He went round. He said, I've come for me goose egg. He said, me goose, he's laid egg. He said, oh, no, 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 no. No, the egg belongs to me, he said. The egg is on my land, the egg belongs to me. That is Indian law. He says, give us that fucking egg. He said, I'm telling you, the egg is on my land, the egg belongs to me. That is Indian law. He said, well, never mind Indian law, we'll have English law just for a fucking change. I kick you in the bollocks, you kick me in the bollocks. The one that gives up first owns the egg. As long as that's the law, he said. Oh, and he gave me a right kick in the bollocks. He said, oh, fucking hell, he said. Oh, that fucking smart stuff, he said. But it's my turn now. He says, keep the fucking egg.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Graham Hart Show here on Cornwall Revolution Radio and out of grism.blogspot.com, where Mammy welcomes you to the best news aggregate site on the World Wide Web. It is so good to have your company. If you'd like to join us in the chat room, please click on the HTML5 chat link on the top right-hand side of the page, just below the player of your choice. As is normal, I'm joined by my out-of-Ireland co-host, Bryzer. Good evening, Bry, and I hope all is good with you, my friend.
Yes, good evening, Graham. Yeah, all good here. Thank you very much. Looking forward to a very, it should be a great show tonight.
Well, I think she's smashing the house up at the moment, but she should be with us. Oh, you're here. Ladies and gentlemen, the lady of the moment, our guest tonight, folks, is currently center stage in the alternative media and hammering in the wings of even mainstream. It is, of course, none other than truth warrior extraordinaire, Alison Chablow. Good evening, Alison. It's great to have you with us.
Hello, Graham. Thanks so much for having me on. It's a pleasure.
It's our pleasure. It really is. We deal a lot with history and health and all manner. But like I said, you're centre stage at the moment. It's been quite a time for you, and you know this case is being followed around the world, which is fantastic. And did my research, a little bit of research last week, and I thought, for, as far as I'm concerned, Alison, everything sort of took off. From Echo, Echo, Echo. I didn't know that you had previous. I mean, you've had a lot of trouble with these people.
I have, yes, yes. It's been going on for since about 2011, something like that.
Wow.
Yes. Not my current accusers. They joined the fray, but the Israel lobby in general, yes, since about 2011, all started with my support for the Palestinians.
Right.
And the pro-Palestinian cause, yes.
Yes, me too. I think it was probably around that time that I found out about Palestine as well. But we can move back through later on, if you want, through some of the things that's happened in the past. But I wanted to get straight down to the court case at the moment, because that is, and give that as much time as we need. what has been going on. Could you explain to our listeners, Alison, how you came to be in this position where you've been into court now?
Well, the earlier attacks on my career and etc. involved getting. I had several contracts cancelled, letters of complaint were sent to my employers, etc. But in 2015, I was in the middle of a cruise contract, and I was appearing at the Edinburgh Fringe. In the middle of that contract, I had a full run of shows in a very good venue with a grand piano, and I had this run of shows. And my accusers at the time, not the people who took me to court, but their associates, they tried to get this show banned. This show of mine banned, and in order I told the venue organizer, look, you know, this is what they're saying about me. They're calling me a Holocaust denier. Are you sure you want to be associated with me? Oh, it's fine. This is the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. We're all for freedom of speech. Your show won't be pulled. Okay.
Yeah.
So I went out and did a Quesnel salute, just to explain to you, to your readers, this is a. The enemy call it an inverse Nazi salute. Right. And it was there's discrepancies about where it actually originated from. But in fact, it's a symbol or a kind of trademark of a French comedian who also happens to be black. His father was black. His mother was a white French woman from I think, Brittany. But this comedian, he's got great success, but he questioned several facts with regard to the Israel lobby, and he became a target. Before this, he was loved by the mainstream, always on the TV, had his own shows, etc. And this guy struggled for a long time, but now he's the most successful comedian in France today, and he has this Quesnel. So he encourages his supporters to go out, and he's a big pro-Palestinian supporter, go out and do this Quesnel. You put your arm down and you can have if you just Google it, that's Quenelle, you can see you can have different grades. You put your arm straight down, but with your other hand, you measure the degree, like a big Quesnel is your hand right on your shoulder, or you can give a gentle one, which was mine in Edinburgh. But this photo of mine that I put on Twitter saying, oh, you didn't manage to get my show banned, this then resulted in me being targeted by this association called the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. And all this came more clear as time went by.
Yeah.
And from that day on, I really became trolled. Yeah. I was trolled constantly. I always was having to block accounts, but these same people would log off and troll me anyway and come on and interact with whoever I was interacting with. Oh, why are you interacting with this vile Holocaust denier? Any gigs that open mics that I was doing, they would target the venues, even Christmas carol concerts. Can you believe it? They tried to find the church where I was performing these carols or the social club. I was banned from my local social club after they wrote. Yes. Yes.
Well, mine's a working man's club. I can't see that happening, but
well, yeah, this is a working man's club as well. Okay. They it's called the Labour Club, but it's unaffiliated with the Labour Party.
Yes, I've worked on.
Everyone is welcome. You know, everyone is welcome, but not Alison Chablot. This is after, you know, giving my time for free. We'd organise concerts for Gaza. Benefit gigs. All the money went to a Palestinian charity. Yeah, but no, just a few examples of my tweets were sent by this organisation to this club, and I was banned from the building. That was in January 2016. I kept being trolled, you know, and they're obviously, it's a system of baiting and entrapment via social media. And this is a charity. They're supposed to give support. Hmm. But their raison d'être is to bring about prosecutions. And this is becoming more and more clear. And I started to write songs about what was happening to me. I'm sure you understand, as an artist, we tend to react to what's going on around us creatively with our method of expression. And in my case, it's not just writing in the written word, it's also writing songs.
Yeah, and comedy is so useful. Comedy's Sorry? A great comedy in your case. Excuse me, and in my case, when I landed up being locked up in the cells, it's satire. Comedy really hits home.
I think it does. I think they would absolutely. Rather be abused and insulted and swore at and called all sorts of names and than be mocked. That's become clear. Yeah. In court last week, the chief witness said, "Oh yes, you know, if Miss Shablow had read out her lyrics in a deadpan fashion, we may have prosecuted her. But you know, the song is the song, and the message is there." And so so I started to write these songs, and the first one was called Nemo's Anti-Semitic Universe. Then I was sent to, and Nemo was my main troll.
Right.
Who was exposed in court also last year. We'll come to that shortly. Last week he was exposed. But I received some lyrics from a gentleman by the name of Gerard Menuhin. He'd seen my work on YouTube and we started to communicate via email. He's written a book. He's the son of the famous Jewish violinist, Yehudi Menuhin.
Yes, of course.
And he sent me a poem called Tell Me More Lies. And I came up with a tune for this song. So then I had two songs. I started uploading these songs to YouTube. I was in Switzerland at the time, staying with a friend. And she has an old piano. So I just plonked my camera on the piano and sang these songs into the camera, accompanying myself on this honky-tonk honky-tonk piano. And then, you know, the artistic streak continued. I wrote another song called Havara about the transfer agreement, not satirical, based on historical fact.
Yeah, good on you.
And that was after the Ken Livingstone debacle, after he was suspended from the Labour Party for saying yes, but there was this agreement between the Third Reich and the Zionist Jews in Germany to avoid the boycott. They spent the money, and so I studied this book by Edwin Black about this, which says the pact between the Third Reich and Zionist Jews. I wrote a song about that. Then I wrote another song called Kosher Brother.
Yes.
Which even my enemies said that it was a good song. And then came this song, and I knew I had this line in my head, this first line in my head about Irene Zisblatt, the famous diamond swallower. He claims all sorts of things.
Yes.
And that's thanks to a gentleman who was involved with the CODO, with the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust, run by Germar Rudolph. I think this gentleman, whose name is Eric Hunt, he's kind of withdrawn from the revisionist community since then, but he did a whole lot of research on this film by Steven Spielberg, which is called The Last Days. Well done. The Last Days. So it focuses on three or four persons who claim to have, you know, either been Holocaust survivors or liberated the camps, and they all these turn out to be rather dubious stories. But the most extraordinary story is this woman called Irene Zisblatt, who's a Hungarian Jew, is deported and sent to Auschwitz. She was there for about 8 months, and she claims on this film that, you know, that she was downed for her skin to be made as a lampshade, that she survived. She survived being checked into the gas chambers not once but twice, and once she escaped and they threw her over the electric fence and she would have landed on the train, that Mengele tried to take off her, remove her tattoo. He tried an experiment on her to change the colour of her eyes from brown to blue. And the most ridiculous thing is that, you know, her mother had given her these diamonds and told her to keep them safe and that they might... And she swallowed these diamonds every day.
Yeah. I think we can safely say the lady's
first. And you know, when they came out the other end, she would wash them in the soup and just swallow them again.
Excuse me.
My song is deemed to be grossly offensive. I wrote this song, you know, and I had this first line in my head for about a week. And I remember it was May in Switzerland. And it was very sunny and I was hanging out the washing and I had this first song. My name is Irene Zisblatt and I come from Hungary. And that went on. And I, you know, as soon as I get a first line, that's it. The song is pretty much it. So I researched which other survivors I wanted to talk about, and the two prime candidates were Elie Wiesel and Anne Frank, or rather her father, Otto Frank.
Yes.
But I needed a chorus, and custom would be to go to bed with my notebook and try and think of how to further the song. And suddenly the idea came for the chorus to use the theme for Havan Aguila. So I knew that I had a good song there, and I wrote in the chorus about Jewish power and influence and the military system and the control of the media, etc. So that began them rolling the ball. They said they would have already reported me to police, this campaign against anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
But from then on, the reports to police accumulated until in November. The Crown Prosecution Service still hadn't taken any action regards these songs, but I was arrested on other offences. I was accused of being harassed by the same people who managed to get me kicked out of one of my jobs in 2014.
Yeah.
Another woman who claims that I'd been harassing her on Twitter, and another person not connected with the campaign against anti-Semitism who'd reported me for my songs. But none of those charges came to anything. I didn't even have to answer bail in the end, but I was kept in the cells for 6 hours. Mm-hmm. While they went to my parents' house where I was staying at the time and seized my computer, which they held for pretty much almost a year.
Okay.
9 or 10 months they had held my computer, my phone. And a week after I'd been arrested, that was in November 2016, I got a summons for this private prosecution brought against me by Gideon Falter, the chairman of the campaign against anti-Semitism, for causing gross offence with this song, Survivors. And yes, well, I listened to your show with Dennis, that I could have at that point written to the court and say, you've got to prove that you have jurisdiction over me. I knew that, you know, if I went into the court, then I was going into the system. A lot of people did talk about this. I talked about it with my lawyers. But it was a conscious decision to give publicity, to bring publicity to the cause. And if I hadn't have done, if, you know, if I'd have gone that, they would have just still kept harassing me, still kept writing to police. Since then, there's been numerous court cases, numerous adjournments. One judge already had to recuse herself after I found photographs of her on a paid trip to Israel with the Conservative Friends of Israel. So now we've got a new judge.
Beautiful.
One must feel sympathy for some people might think I'm crazy, but he must find himself, as Richie Allen was saying, I spoke to Richie Allen last week, he must find himself in a difficult situation. And last week was my trial. And despite all these previous hearings, Graham, you know, the trial was set down for a day.
Yes.
And the prosecution said, yes, we only need a day. There's only these two witnesses, and I've only got one or two witnesses. That's all we need. But on the morning of the trial, suddenly the prosecution announces that, oh, we need more time. We won't have time for all the evidence and the witnesses. I think in autumn as well, just before Christmas, there was a Freedom of Information request delivered by by the campaign against anti-Semitism, but by the Derbyshire Police and Crime Commissioner, who'd had a meeting with the campaign against anti-Semitism, the London Shomrim. These are the Jewish Neighbourhood Watch.
Yes.
Police force, if you like. You know, they have the right to have their own police force. So apparently our police force isn't good enough for them, you know. Communications between the campaign against anti-Semitism and the Derbyshire Police and Crime Commissioner's Office began on the day that I published Survivors, which was the 8th of June 2016. And there are numerous letters. This first one was from Gideon Falter, and then the other witness, Stephen Silverman, who's also on the board of the campaign against anti-Semitism. His title is Director of Enforcement. So the old Jewish terrorist organisations, the Irgun and the Haganah, they had directors of enforcement.
Yeah.
He wrote to this police and crime commissioner every day, pretty much, saying that, you know, he's also writing to police every day. So they, this was, I think, quite a blow for the prosecution that these documents came to light. It's clear who they're talking about, even though my name has been redacted. This woman has been now writing songs that attack Holocaust survivors. In court, the main witness had to admit he'd not even read the books of these people. He'd not read Irene Zisblatt's book, The Fifth Diamond, yet she is the person that he claims to be fighting for protecting against my gross offence. But but it's so subjective, yes. And this trial is very important for freedom of speech,
of course,
general freedoms, not just about the Holocaust, but for our speech,
yes,
in general.
Well, I want to go back just a minute, Alison, to when you were away from your parents' home at the time, and the police called and took your computer and your telephone. Is that, how did your parents feel about that, with the police calling them?
Oh, they're not very happy at all.
But they must have been quite stressful.
The police had been back until these freedom of information documents were delivered. I think it was in November, last November. The police came quite regularly. One point, there were four policemen came to the door. Oh, and the last visit, two coppers turn up at the door. My father was on the phone. I was on the train on the way back. On the way back to my mum and dad's house, and these policemen, the first thing they said, oh, we're not here about Alison, and they gave a card saying, we've had some robberies in the area. Please, if you do see anything suspicious, take this card and ring this direct number, so you don't have to ring 101.
Yeah, that's a noser on.
But they didn't go to any of the neighbours, Graham, and tell them the same things. They were clearly wanting to find out where I was, where my whereabouts. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been on bail now by the time the trial part two gets underway on March the 7th, I'll have been on bail for 18 months.
Good
for singing songs, causing no harm or injury to anybody, but just offending a tiny minority of people who consider that, this should not happen, that this tiny minority of people with a huge amount of, a disproportionate amount of power in the media, in finance, in government, can decide, what is lawful when it comes to causing offence.
Yes.
And they don't even have to watch the songs. They're not being, no one's being forced to watch.
No.
And the sending, there's the legal arguments. These legal arguments, there are two legal arguments that need to be resolved, that need to be judged, if you like, before the actual facts of the case can be judged. And the judge in the case still hasn't done that, despite the legal argument hearings having taken place in October, with all the submissions being sent off. They're now claiming, that sending a URL, posting a URL is sending a grossly offensive message. The URL in itself is www.grahamhartshowmummiesgrizzonblogspot, whatever. The URL isn't offensive in itself. The person who watches the video by clicking play is effectively sending the message to themselves, or causing the message to be sent. So this needs to be judged. There needs to be a decision taken on whether posting a URL is sending a grossly offensive message. Now, we can argue that, yes, the content of the URL, the YouTube video, whatever, might be offensive to some people, but the viewer still has to choose it. And I think in the case of my songs, as my associate, who's very kindly allowed me to publish a post on my blog, that my songs are, they're not saying, oh, gas the Jews,
no.
shove them all in the oven, let's go. They are satirical. Clearly, you have to watch them maybe. You're not going to get the message straight away. You're going to have to watch them several times. Just check if you've actually been offended.
Yes. Yeah.
And their performances, they are theatrical performances. Whatever one might say, oh, yes, but it's not satire. She's got a political message, blah, blah, blah. And this is so shocking. All the people that died in the deportations. And But I'm not going into that area of things. I'm saying just look at these liars. Just look at these liars and consider what the Holocaust stands for, what the Holocaust, the functions of the Holocaust, what are they? And I think that's, you know, the functions of the Holocaust are becoming clearer and clearer every day, and more people are waking up to the truth of the issue. And not only does the Holocaust sustain the pariah state of Israel at the expense of not only the Palestinians, but the Germans who keep having to pay all this money.
$4 billion a year.
But it sustains the globalist agenda.
Yes.
You know, anti-racism. We know where racism will lead to. Mm. It leads straight to the gas chambers at Auschwitz. Begins with name calling, you know, but then we know where this leads to. The double standards are obvious. Here we are in Europe, flooded with immigration. Our cities no longer resemble the cities where I grew up.
No.
Yet Israel closes its borders, kicks out migrants, offers sums of money to African countries to take back the people that they don't want there. So it's fine for Israel to be racist because we suffered so much, our suffering, etc. Everybody else has to just lump it and lose their identity and lose their cultural heritage. And these are the functions of the Holocaust. And I think it's at the heart of our struggle for freedom.
It is indeed. It's based on that. What I have to say while it's in my head, first of all, you said that you bail Alison for 18 months. Now, I was on bail for 3 months, and I know the pressures because in those days I did know my way around the lawful system. So I was just an ordinary member of the public who knew nothing, but I had done nothing wrong, so I wasn't worried about that. But it is scary to have police running all over your property. It's... the good news is that you've had your computer, which I believe has got your backing tracks on.
Yes.
Right, so you can't work properly.
No.
They've stopped you.
Well, they've given it me back now, but they had it for 9 months. They had it for 4 months, Graham, without the charger. They had to contact me and get me to take the charger down to the police station.
Yeah.
So it had been sitting on some shelf for months doing nothing.
Great. So the word charger is very relevant because when this is all done, Alison, charge them. I went after them. They removed stuff from me. I mean, my case was basically, it was a scare tactic. They tried to scare the Cornish because we were making headway and they tried to scare us. And it was just a scare tactic, this old CNLA crap. So, but they took my stuff and they never took receipts. They never checked it. They made so many boo-boos, it was unbelievable. And I just went to them after. There were six of us that got hit, and I was the only one who said, screw this, I'm not having this. You're not going to do that to me. You've had my computer, you've stopped me from working. I can't do my work.
Yeah.
I want compensation. So I went after them for compensation, and I built myself a new studio. Thank you. I just didn't, I didn't quite finish it. I wanted to put up sponsored by MI5, but I didn't get where we moved house since. And but I got money out of them. What I'm saying is, Alison, go after them. Don't let them get away with this.
Yes.
Go after them. You're owed an awful lot of money.
All these letters to police, all these complaints to police that were revealed in the Freedom of Information request, they were all saying, oh, she's breached her bail. The first hearing, my very first hearing, I was granted unconditional bail.
Yes, that's what I had.
A week later, I was dragged, and this was on the 23rd of December 2016, mm-hmm. the day before Christmas Eve, I was dragged back in front of court. You can do that, you know, a breach of bail there, and it's still under the private prosecution. The CPS hadn't taken over, the Crown Prosecution Service hadn't taken over at that point. So this Gideon Falter managed to drag me back in court in the hope that the judge would revoke my bail and that I would spend Christmas in a jail cell. They had taken posts from Facebook. I obviously had a spy on my Facebook account.
Yes.
And they exposed these posts, and that was when I was gagged. Right. Now, the gagging terms of the bail are very vague.
Yes.
It's, not to post anything racist or anti-Semitic and grossly offensive. It has to be a combination. It has to be very racist and anti-Semitic, racist and grossly offensive, or anti-Semitic and grossly offensive. It has to be both. The Marvel conditions were further tightened later on with address restrictions. And I heard that, you know, that's why they were sending the police around all the time to check where I was.
Oh, this is disgraceful.
But I was in court. There was a hearing on the 4th of October. And it was a hearing I wasn't even obliged to attend, but I was there and I was interested, and it's about me. So I attended this hearing, standing room only in this court. So many people were there. And there was a break. And I sat outside with my lawyer and my supporters, and suddenly these police arrived. And this ended, Graham. I was arrested once for breach of bail inside the court, taken outside. Then the officer said, oh, no, I'm de-arresting you because it's Derbyshire Police and we're not sure about your bail conditions, whether we can arrest you for this, so we're taking you back inside. Half an hour later, I was rearrested for a Public Order Act for another song that I uploaded, called Too Extreme for the BNP. and I was sent to Charing Cross Police Station, where I spent 6 hours. Then I was told that the Derbyshire Police were coming down to get me, and I would be interviewed in Buxton or Chesterfield. I was put inside a van. This copper opened the back door of the van and he said, see that's the floor. It's like this white cell at the back of this police van. Mm. He said, that's the floor. It was disgustingly dirty and muddy, and you know, it had been raining. He said that, but it's also the seat.
Yes, it's dehumanising.
That's all you deserve. You're a criminal. I said, hey, hang on. I've not been charged with any. I've not been convicted of anything. What do you do? Yeah, but you're arrested. 3 hours in the motorway in freezing cold. These two coppers, I was dressed for court, you know, smartly. These two coppers in huge anoraks at the M43 to Chesterfield, then into a car to Buxton, where I spent the next 36 hours in custody.
36
An interview. They held me for 48 hours and they wanted immediate remand. Immediate remand that I would put in jail until my trial on January the 10th. For singing songs. The magistrates in Chesterfield scratched their heads, but they released me immediately. They won't, you know, I'd not got any previous convictions. I had a great lawyer that day. The CPS had turned up the stammering novice who, you know, was totally unconvincing, whereas my lawyer convinced the magistrates fairly easily. But yes, I was holed up for 48 hours for singing songs in October. So I won't be only suing the police for the theft of my property and the false arrests and all the harassment that they caused me, but they'll also be sued for this time as well, and that will include the Metropolitan Police as well. We made that clear in court.
And what do you charge an hour, Alison?
Made that clear in court.
What do you Sorry? What do you personally charge an hour?
For what?
Well, for anything. if you want to do business with me, I'm £150 an hour.
Yes,
that's my goal.
That sounds nice.
If that's well,
yes,
it, my
yes, love. I you think know, so. And I think, you know, the preparation for the trial. I think we're going to get the Crown Prosecution took over in March. The first 3 months and of the hearings, plus the months before that, I think that I should be able to demand costs from the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism for the preparation, etc.
Absolutely,
and the travel costs. Yes, but I think that since then, since this unwarranted arrest and detention and being treated like a common criminal, and then these freedom of information requests that the police have decided to leave me alone. I mean, my accusers, I can't imagine that they've changed their behaviour in regards to still complaining about whatever I do. But I would have to make a very silly error between now and March for anything to happen, I think.
Mm. What really gets me, Alison, is that here's you just singing songs which are satirical and whatever. Yet we have paedophiles running around. We've got corrupt war criminal politicians running around. We've got, hardened criminals, whatever. And all this police time is spent on you. I mean, that just says it all for me. I mean, It's crazy.
It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. As I said, Northumberland Police or Cumbria Police, somewhere they announced that they won't be dealing with small time drug offences. They won't be bothering to do anything about that. But they'll be going after people for speaking incorrect thoughts, politically incorrect thoughts. And all this money, all this hate crime stuff, it's so sad. The police are supposed to be there to protect citizens.
That's their job.
Everything's the 180.
They take, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember when I saw your song "Survivors" first, and I just laughed and laughed. I was just, it made my day. And I called Graham up and I said, "Come here, have a listen to this." And the two of us just fell around the place laughing, you know. And I mean, so it didn't cause us offence, really. I mean, we knew what you were talking about, but it was just it was just brilliant, you know. And how it was comedy. They're persecuting you for comedy. That's all.
Yes,
and these Jews, by the way, they were very good at taking the piss out of everybody else.
Yeah,
you know, and do we go kind of, oh, I'm going to sue, I've got to report you to the cops and have all the half the police force in the country coming after me. I mean, it's, I don't know. It's absurd. Yeah. It's the comedy of the bizarre. It's theater of the bizarre.
It's beyond bizarre. And that's why they're waking more people up. And the further we push them now, they're going to make more mistakes. I feel, Alison, I don't think they wish they left you alone.
Well, and another interesting point in the witness cross examination last week was, can you explain why you targeted Mrs. Shablow? Because before you started targeting her, she was doing her stuff with her small handful of supporters. But you've, with this prosecution, with this private prosecution, you've turned her into something of a minor celebrity. wouldn't it have been better just to ignore the
yes, it would have done.
Like I said before, they've made me famous.
Yes, absolutely.
And they've managed to spread the message that they so desperately want to quash, that they desperately want to make an example of me. But they're not going after people like Ricky Gervais, are they? Or Jewish comedians who, Larry Davis, etc. Or Sarah Silverman, who feels, is given platforms on every major station for her anti Jesus Christ, anti Christian commentary. Nobody says anything about that. No. But as soon as you touch the holy hoax, that's it. You cannot offend Jewry to this extent. It's just a blasphemy. And yes, it's a modern day witch hunt. I'm certainly not the first, and I won't be the last. And they will keep on until they get what they want. Perhaps times have slightly changed since, I would say, revisionism came to light in the 70s.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yes, with the French academic Robert Ferrisson.
Oh, yes. He was on with Brian Rue, I believe, on Saturday.
Yes.
I've not heard the show yet.
I've not heard it either.
No, I'm looking forward to listening.
I will listen.
Yes. Where was it?
They created a law in 1990 in France. It's called the Gayso Act. Okay. Laurent Fabius was the prime minister, I think, or the justice minister at the time, a Jew. And they pushed through this act following an attack on a Jewish cemetery where the graves had been desecrated.
Yeah, probably by
now. Now, there's no proof. They blamed it on these skinheads, but there's no proof. No, rather like the gas chambers. There's no actual proof of this, but they use that to say, oh, we can't have, this is because of revisionism. This is what Holocaust denial leads to, blah, blah, blah. So they put a law which effectively silenced this academic Ferrisson, and he's unable to distribute his works. They've not managed to put him in prison because he was a tenured professor at Lyon University. I mean, he lost his job, but I presume, you know, he. But he, it's his struggle, if you like. There were others before, but he studied these people, and he was the person that brought revisionism to the fore. And then we have the Canadian Ernst Zundel,
yes,
who sadly died last year.
Yes.
The two great Holocaust trials in Canada, 1985 and 1988, where Fred Leuchter was sent to Auschwitz to take samples of the insides of the gas chambers to check to see if there was any hydrogen cyanide gas, Zyklon B, in these gas chambers. And this had Raoul Hilberg, the world number one expert who wrote Destruction of the European Jews, huge volume, but without any proof, without any sources regarding any gas chambers. He was in front of the witnesses and was asked by Doug Christie at the time. He's also passed away, sadly. Zundel's lawyer, can you explain why there is no forensic evidence of homicide by Zyklon B? And he said, oh, you know, I am at a loss. And this is the world number one expert. So all that, you know, I don't remember hearing any of that at the time. Okay, I was young at university, etc. But I don't remember hearing any of that. It was the 9/11 stories that brought it to the surface for me, and you know, David Icke, people like that, much later on. But revisionism broke in the 70s. It was Le Monde, the newspaper Le Monde, published an article by Forresson, the rumour of Auschwitz, the problem with the gas chambers. And I think there are videos still on YouTube of his lectures.
Right.
From that period.
So was that your first introduction to knowing that... I mean, from my point of view, I remember before I was awake, a couple of years before I woke up, which would be like 7-8 years ago now, I heard someone say, actually, I think it was my wife that said she'd read something somewhere that said that people out there are saying the Holocaust was a fake. And my gut reaction was, well, I just find that disgusting. That's absolutely disgusting, because that is what you're going to think. So I remember where I was. You know, I remember being in that situation of thinking that's disgusting. And I know where the general public at large, that's where they are now. They just can't believe that such a thing could be a lie. And then I started looking around. I didn't look around at all. Then I woke up via Breiser. Well, I think Breiser and me, we both woke up via the law system and how the system works. But I did 2 years of that. And then I started to do revisionism. And I started with the first one I seen was Coal in Auschwitz, and it went from there. And I followed a lot of David Irving's work, and it just became crystal clear that this is unbelievable. And then you look at the ramifications of that, of the Germany having to pay $4 billion a year, and what's happening in Europe now with the clergy plan, you know, the wiping out of the white race. So it's all tied in. But when I looked at that, my God, I can't believe this. So that's where I came in. But what was your first reaction? Did you call it out? Said, well, that can't be. There's no way this. It must have happened.
Oh yeah. Well, yes, I had the same reaction, because that's what we're indoctrinated. That's how we're indoctrinated to react. We're indoctrinated to a point to have an emotional reaction. You know, these piles of bodies and the evil Nazis and the gas, the industrial mass killings and all this and the mass graves. And it's piled on us with Claude Lanzmann's Shoah TV documentaries and the films, the never-ending films that they churn out, and the stories. You know, the Daily Mail, the Auschwitz Museum... press releases that are repeated in the Daily Mail. Or they found some tiny sculpture by, you know, some unfortunate Jew who was locked away, or some ballerina that's written, you know, that was in Auschwitz and has written her memoirs. Mm. They always have a meeting with Mengele, these people, you know, and the Dr. Mengele, and I survived because someone threw me a loaf of bread. So it just goes on and on and on and on and on. They pump this propaganda out, as they've been doing since Nuremberg.
Yes, of course.
And but I would say that my awakening, similar to yours, yes, of course, you know, what's happening here? That was I was involved in it was the Occupy movement and all that. That's when I first heard about revisionism. So, but I you know, and I at the time I just said, oh, you know, that's absurd. It's absurd. You're not saying what's this 6 million Jews and. But it was, like I was saying before, this Cornell by Nicholas Anelka.
Well, that
I remember that I told it that I found this particularly amusing. You know, it's the first time that I'd come across a Cornell salute, because in Switzerland, I lived in Switzerland for 20 years, and I have a daughter, and her favorite dish that I used to cook was this dish of, it's a fish dumpling, and they call them Cornell. A dumpling in French is a Cornell. So I found this story not only, you know, interesting because what was happening to Nicholas Anelka, but also because it had a direct relation with my family and food and all this. And in fact, that was when I started to look at this French comedian, Dieudonné, because Nicholas Anelka's Cornell was in support of Dieudonné.
Yeah.
Just for the listeners, the American listeners, Nicholas Anelka is a soccer player who played for Arsenal, and he did a Cornell salute during a game. Isn't that right, Alison?
Have we lost you, Alison?
I'm back.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Absolutely fine. Now, what I was going to say.
Yes. I was talking about Dieudonné.
Yes. What I was going to say.
Just saying to the listeners, just particularly the American listeners, that Nicholas Anelka, who you were talking about, he was a football player who played with Arsenal.
Yes, and he moved to Red Bull.
Well, he used to play with Arsenal, but yeah,
yes, he was with the Arsenal.
But he did a salute.
Yeah. But I wanted to go into that in slightly more detail, Bri, because as you know, guys, I'm football mad, soccer mad. The whole family's football. My son and my wife and my grandson, my son's wife, we're all football daft. We always have, but love my football. Well, I used to. I don't anymore. I prefer local football now. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make here is that my kids and us, you don't only watch the football, you know all the gossip. You know all the gossip. And you're always watching for gossip. And I can tell you now, no one, any football friend of mine, has ever heard of this story. No football fan heard this story.
And it's extraordinary. My dad knew about it. My dad knew about it.
Does he read a decent paper?
It
certainly wouldn't on Sky Sports.
Are there any?
Well, no, there aren't any, no. But it wouldn't on Sky Sports. It wasn't on any news. There was no mention of it on mainstream. So, I mean, if it's not coming down mainstream, you know, then obviously the guys don't know about it. But all my football friends, no one knows a bloody thing about this. And that's what I find incredible.
That's what really turned me. That's what really turned me onto revisionism,
right?
Is Anelka's Cornell.
Wow.
Because I found out that his Cornell, when he'd scored a goal, it was a December football match, just after Christmas, I remember. And I was a lot on Twitter at that time, before I got banned from Twitter as well. But this blew up this story on Twitter. And so I looked into it and I found out that he'd done this Cornell in support of his good friend, the comedian Dieudonné, who I spoke about earlier.
Yes.
And it's Dieudonné's trademark. He does it at all his shows, in his videos. He's got little statues like an Oscar, you know, a Cornell Oscar. And he gives he does a ceremony every year, and the person who's done the most amazing Cornell will get one of these Oscar Cornells. Cornell d'Or, they're called a golden Cornell. So I started then to look into Dieudonné, and I'm a French speaker. I lived in Switzerland, French speaking Switzerland for 20 years. So I came upon a sketch of his called The Deported Jew. It exists on YouTube. with English subtitles. Go and watch it. And it's Giordano playing, you know, playing the guy who's how to say this. He's supporting the Holocaust, but he has this guy come on in little pajamas with a star, saying, "Oh yeah, but you know, we suffered." And this sketch, of course, every time he does something like this, it just gets him dragged in front of the court, even though he's doing it to a paying audience who've bought their tickets. You know, it's not like me putting stuff on YouTube. Yes. Although, you know, obviously this is on YouTube, so it is. But the French get him under this revisionist law. And at the time on his website, he had a link to Professor Faurisson's website. And Faurisson is the foremost scholar. And some of the articles are very deep. The professor, his speciality was classics, Greek, Latin, and media studies.
Right. Good grief.
So that's where, whenever it was in Edinburgh, a year and a half later, when I did my Cornell, the professor's secretary contacted me. He said, "Bravo, bravo." And then they found out that I was a French speaker. So I became, I would say for a year, I developed my contacts within the French revisionist movement before performing at the London Forum in September 2016, which is now, in fact, the video of that performance, which wasn't even uploaded to YouTube by me. It was uploaded by the London Forum channel, but it's got two of the songs I'm charged with the causing offence for, one of which is Survivors and the other one is this Nemo's Anti-Semitic Universe. It's quite amusing. They played these songs in court twice. They played Survivors twice. And the gallery, the public gallery, which was full, they applauded the first time. They got told off by the judge. So if they do that again, they'd be thrown out. But you can see in this, I mean, I got a standing ovation. And Survivors was my last song. Yes. And there's applause in the middle of the song, you know, several times. As with the Nemo's Anti-Semitic Universe, both these songs, they're quite long. You know, Survivors is 5.5 minutes. Nemo's Anti-Semitic Universe might even be a bit longer, 6 minutes or so, but the prosecutor was very quick to, you know, to quash the applause at the end that went on for, I don't know, 2 minutes or something. I got a standing ovation, so it was the judge was you know, quite obviously perturbed. Oh, here's a woman; she can perform to a professional standard. The songs are, then it's not the easiest delivery. No. You know, I have to practice to be able to perform like that. It's not like going out on the soapbox in Hyde Park Corner and delivering your thoughts. It's clearly a theatrical performance, and all the applause and laughter during these songs. Well, one would think that if there was, you know, even a modicum of gross offence within my songs, that you would have heard at least some kind of groan from. Even from, you know, as I say, oh yes, but she's playing in front of a room full of Nazis, you know. Oh. But so yeah, that song was played, and the third song, which is also a revisionist song, is called "I Like the Story as It Is," and that was taken down by YouTube as soon as it was posted, pretty much. And it's a parody of El Condor Pasa, you know, I'd rather be a farmer than a nobleman. I've changed the words, and I've added another Jewish tune at the end of it, where I make fun of the soap and lampshades. And the title, it clearly says satire. You know, I'm very careful to tag all my songs satire, musical, political satire, satire. That song got taken down by YouTube, but they've put it back up. Isn't that amazing? They've actually reinstated this song that I am charged. This was on my YouTube channel, but there's a police screenshot of this song, a screen capture, and the video has been sandboxed, so it has this little warning saying, "Are you sure you want to watch? You know, you might be offended." So the person actually choosing to click, and this is the evidence that they presented in court. The original video uploaded to YouTube with the warning notice, you know, if you click play, you might be offended. And that's what I'm charged with, causing offence for having uploaded this video, which has a warning sign on
it.
And then which was banned, and now which has been reinstated.
Yes, it's been reinstated because they've screwed up.
It's been reinstated, but I don't think it's been reinstated in the UK. You have to get a VPN or use one of these proxy sites to see it.
Yes.
But it's there, as is the too extreme for the BNP, depending on which day I look. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. it's absurd. Absolutely.
Alison, when you were in court and that song was being played, did you look around at the judge? Did you look at the judge and the lawyers and everything? Did they force a smile, maybe?
They were very professional. I couldn't see whether they were, their feet were touching.
I reckon they must have thought, well, this is funny, for Christ. This is just comedy. Why are we here? Mm. You know, what the hell is this all about?
you've got Ricky Gervais making cracking Holocaust jokes on Twitter. Why aren't they going after him? Why aren't they going after him for saying,
Ricky's
yes,
in the club, Alison. Ricky's in
of
the
course,
club.
Of course, of course. But it makes them look very silly by not going after him when they're going after me. You know, it makes them look malicious. It really does. And I've been on at Gervais for a while, you know, saying, well, look what's happening to Dieudonné. Look, he's back up in court. All he did was crack a similar joke to the one you cracked earlier about Schindler's List 2 and a whoopee cushion factory. Why aren't you going to give, you know, speak out for your French counterpart? No, of course not, of course not. He knows on which side his bread's buttered, as the expression goes. But I find it exceedingly sickening and hypocritical. And the only artist, I'd say, prominent artist who stood up for me is Gilad Atzmon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
While I remember, Alison, Breiser and I know Breiser agrees with me. May I say that you look magnificent going into court? That picture was a fantastic picture that you just held your head up and just strolled in with such confidence. The picture gave off real strong vibes that I'm not here to be pissed around. We're up for a fight. Let's go for it. Because of course you are in the right. They can't keep saying these things. It's ridiculous. It's getting more ridiculous by the day. Actually, I mean, we had the films Denial. I don't know if you've seen Denial with. Oh, good grief! I'm trying to.
Rachel Rice.
Yes.
Spooner is his name.
Timothy Spalding.
Timothy Spalding.
Yes, right, Timothy Spalding. Yeah. Now, if you see David Irving is a fine. I mean, I'm no judge of looks. You know what the men are like. If we say he's a good-looking man, the woman always says, "Well, he's not." So, but for me, David Irving was a fine, upstanding man, and to play Timothy Spall in David Irving's role was incredibly stupid, miscast. And Deborah Lipstadt, played by who you said, I can't remember her name.
Rachel Weisz.
Right, yeah. Nice-looking lady. I'll leave it there. But you wouldn't touch the real Deborah Lipstadt with a barge pole. You know, I mean, you know, I'm not that desperate. Thank you very much. You know, I'll find other ways. If there's just you and me left on the planet.
It's all reverse, isn't it? Everything's upside down.
Everything.
That's what they like to portray it. Yeah, they're bad, we're good. Look, we're the beautiful people, the chosen ones, you know?
Yeah, I might watch it one day, but, you know, I just can't. It's like people send me articles about the whole. I just can't read anymore. I've had my fill, you know.
Yeah. Well, it just goes on.
Yes, I do look at stuff that interests me, of course, but I know I just can't be bothered reading the garbage, reading it. No. The press coverage was great. Once you know the truth, it just feels right.
Yes.
And
once you know the truth, Alison, you have no fear anymore. That's why you walked into that court with your head held high. You walked in. You weren't afraid of them because it's, you know, this is the truth. This is what you know.
Yes, it'll be interesting the next time because I will be in the witness stand, of course. So that I'm going to get pressure from the prosecution. So I probably will be a little bit more nervous then, but I don't see why not, because I thought I thought that would be the case on a week last Wednesday that I would be in the witness stand, but I wasn't, so I don't really see why there's any reason for me to be to be here.
There's only one question you need to ask, Alison. Please prove to me and this court that I have offended someone. Please show me the evidence. And they can't, because there is none. There is none. It doesn't exist. That's all. They just answer, keep asking that question. Prove to this court I've offended somebody.
That's what they want. They want a prosecution. You know, I'm not the only one, as I said. There's been several of us who've been targeted by this.
And more on the way,
this organisation.
What would be the outcome of all this if they do find you guilty?
We will appeal immediately, and it will go to a higher court, the divisional court, probably. Yeah. I'm not exactly sure how things will pan out, but. You know, quite a few people have written to me and said, "Oh well, you know, whichever way it goes, you know, if you're acquitted, great. If you're not, if you're found guilty, it'll just prove everything you're singing about is true."
Exactly.
So you know, and but I'm they, not. They I'm can't. Not gonna...
They can't imprison you, really. They can just kind of make your life a misery. Isn't that really?
Well, I think I'm not sure what they could perhaps sentence me on that day to some community service or something. Yeah, you know, whatever it was, but there will be an immediate appeal, and if you know, in the unlikely circumstances that I do get a jail sentence, then we will ask for that to be stayed also in a higher court.
Yeah,
but I'm not afraid. I've been saying this, and you know, I have to say kudos to my mum and dad, because you know it took me a long time to convince them that what I was doing was, you know, I couldn't really possibly be doing anything else. It was just the way things were happening in my life. And I do think they, they still might not, you know, think that it was the wisest thing that I ever did, but I think that somehow they are quite proud, and you know that they saw the press articles and.
Well, that was incredible that you made mainstream.
Yeah. So
no one expected that.
And just thanks so much to them. You know, I said, well, you know, you made me, you create, you made, yeah. You're the ones responsible.
Absolutely.
So they and that's the way that I was brought up. You know, traditional. Traditional family, and you know, and very patriotic. So, let's keep flying the flag and try and do something now. And it's this tall tale of the Holocaust, which is poisoning everything. So, yeah, let's get rid of that and stop these organisations from bringing prosecutions against people. Like I was saying, I have a friend up in Scotland. Who's you know a venerable person, but they also attacked this lady, and she also asked for one of these subject access requests. The police send information, and it's just report after report from the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, accusing her of speech crime and thought crime because she was supporting the kids of Gaza, you know, the ones that are still alive, the ones that haven't been shot by the IDF.
And used for body parts,
or bombed, you know, in their houses. That's all she was doing. She was sticking up for the underdogs. but it seems when it comes to Israel Palestine, you know, you can't do that without risking having the police come round. She had the police come round. They took all her devices, all her phones, computer, laptop, tablet. They had her in the cell, for goodness. And this is a woman, you know, who's had health problems.
Okay, folks.
It's just dreadful, just dreadful. That they are looking to bring a conviction, to bring prosecutions. That's all they do. They want to bring prosecutions against decent law-abiding citizens for expressing an opinion and create a legal precedent which will effectively outlaw criticism of Israel and outlaw any questioning of the official narrative with which we are bombarded on a daily basis by the mainstream, which is, as we all know, owned by the associates of these same people. So,
well, we're at the top of the hour now, folks. I think now would be a good time to take a wee break. I could certainly do with one. So I'm going to play a couple of songs from Alison. One, we're going to open up with Grumpy Old Goat. and then that's going to be followed by Jerusalem is the capital of Palestine. So We've been asked to if you would do a couple of songs, Alison, but I think you probably want to sit down to the mic rather than do it live. So we'll play these couple of songs now, folks, and we'll be right back after the break. Don't go away.
You're a grumpy old goat. It's not my fault if you feel this way. You're the one who drank all those beers yesterday. Should I get my coat? If you're feeling like shit, well, that's the price you have to pay. You're gonna have to sleep the whole day away before you're fresh and fit. If you never eat when you feel the heat, oh, what's your body supposed to do? If you're too pissed, you won't get kissed. Your good woman won't be loving you. Go on and cry me a liver. And the holiday we could have had, it's not my wish to make you look bad. You know me, I just stand and deliver. If you think that I'm wrong, if you think I'm out to make you sad, I'm not, but I'd be very glad if you listened to the words of my song. We get along. Should I bite my tongue? I don't want no trouble with you. Hangover headache, there's more at stake. It's your health, your life, it's true. So don't be such a grumpy old goat. No joke, if you booze, you lose. Only go a life, so you must choose. I'll get me coat. Jerusalem's the capital of Palestine, Palestine, Palestine. Jerusalem's the capital of Palestine. Let the walls come tumbling down. You can talk about a two-state solution for 50 years or more. If Zionists won't release their grip, there'll be everlasting war. Jerusalem's the capital of Palestine, Palestine, Palestine. Jerusalem's the capital of Palestine. Let the walls come tumbling down. Up to the walls of Ramallah we march with stones in hand. Go pelt those cowards of the IDF, we've the right, this is our land. Jerusalem's the capital of Palestine, Palestine, Palestine. Jerusalem's the capital of Palestine. Let the walls come tumbling down. Then the rubber bullets begin to fly, tear gas begins to blow. The UN, the US turn a big blind eye. Arabs, no place to go. Jerusalem's the capital of Palestine, Palestine, Palestine. Jerusalem's the capital of Palestine. Let the walls come tumbling down. Jerusalem's the capital of Palestine, Palestine, Palestine. Jerusalem's the capital of Palestine. Let the walls come tumbling down. You're listening, Donald? You can talk about your so-called genocide. Play victim till you die. The occupation. It must end, we must restore free Palestine. Jerusalem's the capital of Palestine, Palestine, Palestine. Jerusalem's the capital of Palestine. Let the walls come tumbling, walls come tumbling, walls come tumbling down.
Alison Shablo, grumpy old goat. Grumpy old goat. Jerusalem built the is the capital of Palestine and a kettle. You did have your mic on mute, Alison. And
didn't I?
No, don't worry, my darling. We've put that right in there. We put that right when it goes to when it goes to post. It's okay. We'll put it right when it goes to post production. Where was I? Because I was quite. These songs come so quick, don't they? That you just get them, and like I said, I've got one on the way. And you inspired me to do that. I thought, screw it, let's do one, because I know when I did, like I said, when I did the song last time, it got me into serious trouble. But I thought, you know, come on, let's have some fun here. Let's go and support Alison, and anyone out there, folks, if you can write these sort of stuff, any art that you can do, any satirical work or whatever you want, tell the truth. That's all we need to do. Put it out there. And, you know, I'm a musician and I write, so it's about time I got off my arse and did one. And I've got one on the way. I'm not going to say no more than that. But I hope to have it out before Alison's trial. Talking of when you go back to your trial, Alison, in March the 7th, you had 30 people that came, about 30 supporters that came and supported you. The Fetch was talking about when they organised the march, the White March. I'm not quite sure. You might be able to know more about this, Briser. What did Dennis say about they organised the march through alternative media? They took what was the march I'm talking about, Bri?
Charlottesville.
Charlottesville. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Charlottesville. Yeah.
Okay. And they pushed this and promoted it for 6 months on these so-called big alternative media sites, and 130 turned up. Now that's pathetic, quite frankly, and. When you go back next time, they've now given us, thank you very much, Prosecution Service, you've now given us until March the 6th, actually, to gather as much support for Alison as we can possibly get. I will be there. Brizel will be there. There's another couple coming up from Cornwall who've contacted me. Hello, Dave and Anna, if you're listening. So there's people around the country, and I think what we're going to do, Alison, we're going to try and make this a real big promotion on our part. We're going to constantly remind people of the trial that's coming up, and we're coming to support you. And we want to see 1,000 people there. That's what we want.
No, it would be amazing. Well, it would be absolutely amazing.
Well, we've got time to do it, so and let's
a big,
try.
Yeah, and a big kick up the backside to
absolutely
to those wishing to silence us, absolutely. Those wishing to remove our yes. freedoms.
Yeah, that's one trip we can do this year, Brian. That's on our bucket list.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much to everybody. Really, the support has been overwhelming. But you know, it's not about me. It's about everybody. It's about all our freedoms. Absolutely. Everybody's rights. Those freedoms we hold long cherished freedoms in this country of ours, in Cornwall, in England, in Wales.
Oh, thank you.
Wherever,
Alison.
You know, in Europe. Thank wherever, you know, thank we need to preserve our freedoms.
Thank you for your acknowledgement of Cornwall.
Yeah. And there's another lady who's in a German prison right now, Monica Schaefer.
Yes,
I think you
yes.
know her, Alison. And
yes.
you know, just dragged out of a courtroom and no charges, no nothing. Just
tell us
I mean,
what you
this, know. This is despicable, really. I mean, and Germany, you know, sadly, what's happened to that once beautiful, great country? You know, it's just it's gone down the tubes. I mean, there are people there who are there who are trying to do something, but they're just so up against it because it's a Zionist occupied government, isn't it? And has been since 1945.
Yes.
What do you know about Monica?
Yes, I've met Monica. It was one of my wishes, one of my dreams that I meet Monica and we play some music together. And that happened about a year ago now, February, March.
Oh, wonderful.
2017. I went to Canada. and did a little tour there, sponsored by a gentleman by the name of Paul Fromm, well known in the nationalist community.
That's quite...
And he organised that we meet the white nationalist community. He organised two gigs in Alberta, quite close to where Monica comes from, one in Calgary and the other in Edmonton, and we played together. She played Survivors. I do have some rather poor recordings of Survivors, but obviously, no, I can't share my work, the controversial songs, for risk of being dragged back to prison. But yes, it's quite strange that she was a visiting her brother, who's been Alfred, who's also very staunch white nationalist and prominent figure within the revisionist movement. She was visiting him over Christmas, and she attended a trial by a German revisionist who's also been in the news. Sylvia Stoltz is her name. This Sylvia gave a speech, I think, in 2014 in Switzerland, and she's on trial for denying the Holocaust, for want of a better expression, for revisionism. And Monica attended this court hearing and was very bizarre. How did the authorities know that Monica would be attending this trial? And why have they detained her indefinitely? Apparently, I heard yesterday, she's in good spirits.
Good.
Okay, well, that's good.
And the authorities are going crazy because of all the fan mail she's getting.
Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful. I'd love to hear it.
There's an address that people can write to Monica. It's easy to find on the internet if you do a search of Monica's name.
Here's another call out, Alison, to everyone who's listening. Let's send cards, best wishes cards and everything to Monica.
Yes.
No, don't be calling out. You're saying, we agree with you. Just giving her our best wishes that we're behind you.
That's
all the way.
That's exactly it. And she's a Canadian citizen, so we have the right to write in English and not in German. I saw somebody yesterday saying, the German prisons, they don't accept correspondence in other languages. But when the prisoner is of another nationality, they have to do that, or it's a grave abuse of human rights. And Monica, of course, she is of German heritage, so she can speak German, but her family and friends, supporters, of course, they are able to send her cards, greeting cards, best wishes, thanks to her struggle. And her crime is posting a video to YouTube. I think in the same, rather like me, she didn't actually post it on her brother's channel, apologising to her parents because, she received the usual indoctrination at school and made a video saying, at school I was bullied for being a German, and then I was indoctrinated with the official narrative, and I would go home and question my parents, why didn't you do something? So that's all she's saying in this video, and she rightly says, as all self-respecting revisionists say, that that there's no denying that families were deported and split up, and it must have been terrible, and there were these work camps, but we question the official narrative regards the death tolls and regards the method of alleged genocide, and that's what she's being indefinitely detained for. I imagine under this section 130 it is, under this German law. But her brother, he's been perquisitioned quite a number of times, had his computers, all his cameras seized, but he's a German citizen.
Yes, but this
so
is
I find this very bizarre, why have they gone after his Canadian sister, who does have German residency, he has it, but they've not been able to jail him. They've not been able to jail Ursula Haverbeck. Of course, we have Horst Mahler, who's in prison, but, and has been for a number of years.
But, Horst Mahler is marked, as George has put in the chat room, that... Sylvia Stoltz is married to Horst Mahler. Is that correct?
Well, I think they were at one time.
Oh, okay.
partners, but no, I think Marlo is not married to her anymore.
Okay.
He's married to another woman.
Right.
I thought Ursula Haverback was still in prison, or she'd been let out, or what?
No, she's never been to prison. They keep reporting, you know, but there's a very long-winded appeal system in the German justice system, and they haven't managed to actually jail her.
Well, that's quite amazing, right? Because I'm like you, Bryser. I was under.
Yeah, I thought she was actually.
Yeah, we're on the case. Yeah. We're on the case, you know.
Okay,
well,
that's interesting.
That is very interesting. Yeah. So, Ursula is not.
It's just a warning, you know. The it's the only way they can keep the myth alive is by claiming it's a Nazi grandma sentenced to jail for Holocaust denial. And it's all the Auschwitz. I read something today about the Auschwitz accountant. I think it's called Reinhold Hanning, maybe, a 96-year-old gentleman who they blame for having, you know, they say that all these Jews were gassed and he never said anything, therefore they can put him in jail even though he's 96. Even though the same guy, I think, served time in Poland after the war. He already served 2 or 3 years in jail after the war. That's the only way they can keep alive is to go after these, you know,
what's been
functionaries at Auschwitz and then report that these people are being put in jail. So you better not, you know, have anything to do with Holocaust or Holocaust denial or we'll jail you.
What's really interesting, Alison, is the age. These people are not young. This is, I find, pathetic. There's plenty of people out there they can jump on, and yet they choose to jump on people. You're the baby.
Yeah.
Of course, you're the baby of them all, of course, I hasten to add. but there are people much older. They're like, we're talking about Ursula Haverbeck, Monica Schaefer. I don't know how old Monica is, but...
She's 58.
Okay.
She's one of the babies as well. But, you know, 90-year-old people, I mean, come on.
For Christ's sake.
It's ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
Vulnerable people who can probably hardly, you know, who are probably... can hardly walk and can hardly, you know, I mean, this is despicable. But I think it's fear-based mind control. Put the fear out there. You dare talk about this is what happened to you, you know.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, but, you know, we keep on it. We have to keep at it. We have to end this nonsense now.
I think we do, and I think there are more and more people that we need critical mass, and I think that...
We're heading there.
There are more and more people who are willing to speak out using their real names. That's what we need.
Absolutely.
And I understand, you know, it's understandable why people are reticent to do this. They have jobs, they have mortgages, they have family. But I would say 2 or 3 years ago, I wouldn't have, you know, I just kept these things to myself or my immediate entourage. But now I'll get on the bus or on the train and... You know, if I strike up a conversation with somebody, then I'll get onto the conversation, and it's surprising how many people actually have heard of revisionism and don't react in an emotional way. We tend to be used to seeing the emotional reactions of these trolls on Twitter who, you know, screech anti-Semitism whenever there's the slightest criticism of the official narrative or indeed of Israel, but it's not in real life. Most people you meet are appalled with the way Israel treats non-Jews in their own country, and it has to be also said, and in defence of that there are many anti-Zionist Jews who do protest against the Zionist regime. Because it's in the interests of the Zionists to keep the Jews afraid. The synagogue being bombed and all this, and they have a vested interest in engendering fear amongst their own community, so that they really ought to stop traumatizing their children, you know, sending them to Auschwitz and telling them, oh, this happened because they were Jews, only because they were Jews.
Yeah. Why?
And no wonder they grow up to be the way they are, many of them.
Yeah.
Have you seen that film Defamation, Alison, have you?
Yes, I have, yes.
Yeah, made by an Israeli journalist, you know, and he questioned, like, what is anti-Semitism? What is this, you know? And he was brought up in it, and he just had to go out and figure it out for himself, and he realized there is actually no anti-Semitism, really. Jews are doing very well out there in the world. Thank you very much. And then, of course, he went to the ADL in New York or whatever, and he says, give me some examples of anti-Semitism. And the worst one he got was a Jewish wedding in New York where there was probably nearly 1,000 people at it or something, and they blocked up with their cars, they blocked up the whole roadways and everything and caused a huge traffic jam. And one of the cops got pissed off. He says, oh, it's a fucking Jewish wedding. And this woman heard it, oh my God, and oy vey, and that was it. The only other ones were Jews who didn't get their days off on a Jewish holiday. That was it, nothing. And the ADL, how much money are they getting a year from the government? This is unbelievable. And then, of course, when they brought the kids to Auschwitz, and they had 2 or 3 Mossad agents following them around the place, and 2 or 3 Polish guys sitting on a bench, and they were walking by with their Israeli flags and saying, oh, you from Israel? And the Mossad guy is saying, they're actually saying to you, we hate you, you're Jews, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, incredible.
Yeah. No, they will defend their lie to the hilt. They have far too much at stake. Far too much at stake to acquiesce to what's going on and the work of revisionists, the immense work of revisionists over the past 40 years or so. What kind of historical narrative needs a law to protect it? It's the only one. You can go around denying the Armenian genocide, nothing will happen to you whatsoever. You can go around denying the Holodomor, the 20 odd million white Russians that were killed by the Bolshevik revolutionaries in Stalin and Stalin's Soviet Union, but nothing happens to you at all.
Wow.
Nothing happens. There's no laws to Okay, there are some vague laws in countries such as Spain which don't cite the Holocaust and its genocide. Even genocide's a fairly recent term. It was only invented in 1944 or something. Nobody had ever heard the term genocide before. Nobody had ever heard the term Holocaust before 1970-ish. Mm-hmm. Wasn't really used. It's a burnt offering, but I don't really see how that coincides with piles of supposedly gassed bodies. The true meaning of the Holocaust is a burnt offering. We can say that would apply to the hundreds of thousands killed in the bombing raids carried out on German towns and cities by the Allies. But no one's ever been brought to justice for that. That is an actual war crime, isn't it?
There's a war crime going on.
No one's ever been brought to justice for that.
There's a war crime going on in Palestine right now, but they can do what they want, you know. Mm. They can do whatever they want, but where is their proof indeed? I mean, I've studied it, and I just find it incredible. But what you're doing, Alison, is now, you are now, for me, you're the first one I've seen where they're looking. I'm sure they're saying, oh my God, I wish we left this one alone, because they're just giving us a lot of energy. They've put their foot in it big time, and I think they wish they'd never seen you, and I wish they think they left you alone, because we are at the point now where people are beginning to wake up, as you said. And the great thing about that is that the more people are waking up every day, not less. The number will not drop, folks. The numbers will keep going up until we've got the critical mass. The Holocaust, the Jews' only proof is word of mouth. No documents or photos of a working gas chambers. None at all. Show me one, folks. But plenty of well-paid, I was there witnesses who saw it all. And the David Irving case against Penguin Books with Deborah Lipstadt. She was funded to the tune of £13 million, folks. And he took her on and he beat her every round except the last round when they ruled against him. I mean, we could go on and on and on. Ernst Sundl set the figure for Auschwitz. He moved the figure down by 2.5 million, for goodness sake. 2.5 million. It's still six. Isn't it amazing that these people are supposed to be good with money? They're good with money, but they can't. It's still 6 million if you take away 2.5 million. And this bloody 6 million figure, I believe that there was 3.5 million in Europe at the time when these six millions supposed to have been gassed. And why did they want to get? Why did Hitler hate the Jews? Why have they been taken out of 109 countries 200 times? Why? Because you're filth.
Yes.
That's why. Yeah, you're filth.
Is it the Jewish historian or commentator Benjamin Lazar? He remarked on it. You know, the common denominator when it comes to pogroms, when it comes to the Jews being exiled from all these 109 countries or possibly more, is Jewish, is being Jewish. It's Jews. That's the common denominator. The countries were all different. They spoke different languages. Switzerland, Germany, France, England, Spain. The cultures were different, the customs were different, but the Jews all got thrown out of these countries. So the common denominator is Jews. There is something in their behaviour which leads to them being hated, and now they're having to create laws to stop people from hating them. And this is exactly the same kind of behaviour which caused all the pogroms in the past. Never again, never again, they say. But in fact, it's the Jews who never learn. And I'm talking about the Zionist Jews. It's a religion, you know. It's kind of, even the police, when they talk about it, it's racially targeted. But then it's not a race. Now, I don't even think that you could call Judaism a religion, not based on the appalling volumes that constitute the Talmud. And not even a cult, it's more like a gang.
Well, the most
even the atheist Jews who, you know, atheists but still define themselves as Jewish. Well, how does that work? They will still, you know, uphold the state of Israel, the Jewish only state. And you can be 100% sure that these atheist Jews are all liberals who are going on about refugees and no racism, and we don't want racism in our country. But they still support a Jewish state in Israel. I can't deal with it anymore.
Just interesting, when you talk about the Holocaust, where that word came from, well, probably the first Holocaust, and this goes back to a guy called Chris Fogarty, who wrote a book called Ireland, A Perfect Holocaust, which talks about the so-called famine, which was a genocide, a Holocaust. And people asked him, well, why do you call it a Holocaust? He says, well, people just died in their houses and whatever, and they had to burn the houses. That's the burnt offering type of thing, because bodies were rotting and decaying, whatever. So they had to burn the houses.
Mm-hmm.
And we were told that 2 million died from starvation, but actually the number was closer to 6 million. Now, where did I hear that number before?
Absolutely.
And it's like they steal these terms. They take them for themselves. And talking about whether Jews are a race, a religion, or an ethnicity, they're none. They're just a crime gang. They aren't a race, because there's seemingly black Jews out there. So where's the race thing come into it? They're not a religion because, well, the Torah is actually the Old Testament, which comes from the Bible, which last time I looked, it was a Christian book. And ethnicity means language. They have to have a language. Well, the language they speak is Hebrew, which is actually more closely related to Welsh and the Irish language, or Yiddish, which is closely resembled to the German language. Mm-hmm. And they've just stolen them.
And they're not Semitic either.
They're not Semitic either. No.
They're not Semitic. This is the absurdity of it. Gideon Falter, blue eyes. They haven't got an ounce of Semitic blood in their veins or in their DNA.
No.
Oh, anti-Semitism. It's another misnomer. And I agree absolutely with David Icke on that point. The Palestinians, however, are Semitic, and they are the ones who are suffering the consequences of this huge lie that the supposed genocide of the Jews and the alleged gas chambers, a gigantic historical political swindle.
Absolutely. I want to mention, Alison, that most people in the revisionist movement, in the truth movement, have seen the Daily Express, Judea declares war on Germany. most people have seen that headline. But if you actually read the article, folks, partway down it says, we call on all people of Judea to support our co-religionists. They called it a religion. So this was in 1933. We call on the world to support our co-religionists. So there you go. Yeah. They said that, not me. That was in 1933.
In regard to the 6 million, I did a study. There's a website of the American Library of Congress, and you can research archives. So I did two searches, one with the figure, the figure 6 million, and one with the actual words 6XIX million. And the earliest reference to 6 million was about 1840.
Yes.
Coincidentally, just around the time of the formation of the World Zionist Organization. And these the original articles, they talk about census, you know, the number of Jews in the world is 6 million. But as you creep towards 1900, 6 million Jews facing starvation in
Russia.
In Russia. And then, of course, it comes up, and I think we've all seen that, as well as the Daily Express. We've all seen these, you know, how many times the figure 6 million comes up before 1939.
I think they used it in the paper about 525 times. They've used that, like you said, it started around 1840, and they've used the 6 million figure in news articles over 500 times. So there you go. There was one thing that I know Bryza will be interested in this as well. I seen an article that Gilad Atzmon put on Facebook, and I think he was debating him, Alison. I didn't read all of it, but what I did do was go to the article the speech that Gilad had made in Germany, and I couldn't quite make it out. Can you throw any light on that debate that you had with Gilad on Facebook?
It's an interesting.
Because it sounded to me like he was backtracking.
It was interesting. He went to Germany. He was invited to speak in front. Gilad will admit that, you know, that Jewish privilege exists, of course, and that he may, as an ex-Jew, benefit from this. He was invited to speak by a German organization, which is, in fact, a Marxist organization. They're old-fashioned Marxists. I imagine, I'm not sure about this, perhaps somebody will correct me, that they would have been the kind of Marxists that Horst Mahler was originally involved with.
Yes.
But these people are old-fashioned Marxists, true socialists, and he was invited to speak at their yearly conference. And before Gilad gave his speech, there were articles in the press, and these were instigated by the liberal left, saying, oh, we can't be having this vile Nazi, neo-Nazi, Holocaust denier speaking on a public platform. So that Gilad gave a speech, and I think the person who wanted him banned actually spoke before Gilad, but the organisation let him speak. He wasn't banned. He's very vocal in defence of his own philosophy, and quite rightly so. And he talks about Holocaust denial, but in the context of the speech, he clearly makes it clear that he's against all history laws, you know, all these denial laws. But he also, I think, makes an allusion between the fact that they wanted to ban him and the fact that one of the reasons why the Third Reich are still vilified today is because of the censorship of certain artists who were considered to be a danger to the regime, to Hitler, etc. So that was what he was aiming at. But when you think about, you know, Gilad, he's been speaking in front of audiences, or playing his sax. Obviously, that's all he's done. So he knows his audiences. He's not going to go in front of a room of Marxists and start openly stating that we should support revisionists and make sure, you know, stop putting them in jail. But I think that was the actual point of his speech. Afterwards, this organisation, this Marxist organisation, did publish a couple of articles on their website saying, you know, it's time that we started to have an open discussion about these historical events. So I think he's, you know, a good influence. He gets lots of criticism, of course, from every side, from the left, from the right, from the extreme, the far right, whatever you want to call it. He gets lots of criticism, but I think that in rather like David Icke, he has a big following, and he represents along with Icke a stepping stone for people to come towards our way of thinking and towards what's really at stake here, and that's pretty much Western civilization, the core values, the cornerstone of our civilization, of open debate, yeah, and freedom of expression.
Well, absolutely. We're living in a communist state now. If they win this, then we're living in a communist state anyway. But this is just so absurd now. We've interviewed Gilad, and
I've
met Gilad. I went to see him when he played with the Blockheads, which I thoroughly enjoyed. He is a fine musician. There's no doubt about that. He's nearly as good as me, actually. And
good plug there, Graham.
Rivalry. Yay.
No. It's all good fun. The Blockheads were great. He played rock. He played rock that night, and then he invited me to see his modern jazz concert in St. Ives the night after, which I went down to. And I love the tunes of jazz, modern jazz. I love it. Nice, smooth music. But it's when these horn players go off on one, you know, what are you saying to me? I don't get it. You're just playing a load of bloody notes here. You know, you're not making any sense to me. Speak to me solo, and they never do. And so I just don't get it. And you get these jazzers going, yeah, yeah. And I'm thinking, you don't know what you're bloody listening to. You're just trying to be this is cool jazz. But he is a very fine player.
They're all stoned, man.
No, they're not. No, I was. I had to listen to it. But, you know, the band, they're very, very fine musicians. Gilad is a wonderful musician, and I find him a very likable gentleman. And I think the work he's done is good. It's just that really good. And we'll probably have him on if we can catch him in the future. But, yeah, I met him. He was a really nice man. And everything I thought is, yeah, you're doing good work. I see where you're coming from. In fact, I've said many occasions, you know, people run down Gilad. I thought, what more is the guy supposed to do? I mean, you know, he said, what more? He's Jewish, or he's not anymore. He calls himself the Wondering Who. What more do you want from him? And we've got to stop to attacking our own. You know, we've got our own opinions, and we don't need to be attacking our own. But it was just that one article I seen. It seemed to me in the article, I read it a couple of times, and Bryce read it a couple of times. I think what he's saying is almost saying as if the Holocaust did happen. That's what the impression I got from that. From that article and that speech that he made in Germany.
Oh, he's certainly never for want of a better term, denied the Holocaust. He has supported the right of revisionists to express their opinions. Right. But that is the case of many people within our movement.
Yes.
Many, many people who the press still nevertheless describe as vile Holocaust deniers. There are many people within our movement who do not go that far, but we must be grateful that people like Gilad do go.
I agree.
As far as they do, because they are the icebreakers. They are the stepping stones.
Alison. Well said, man.
Yeah, I actually think that Gilad does know what happened, and I think he does agree. Just by speaking to him, because I interviewed him as well, and I spoke to him afterwards off air, and you know, I can understand where he's coming from. He's got to be careful. He's probably got family in Israel and whatever. You know, he's got to... There's a fine line you draw. And,
there's a couple of
he could come out and he go, it was all a big hoax, whatever. But, you know, there's consequences for him.
He would never be able to speak in Germany again if he did.
He would never get a gig again in England, never mind Germany.
Even now
he's having problems doing gigs.
Yes.
Because the local Jewish community will ring up the theatre that he's playing in, and they'll put a stop to it. It's happened to him a couple of times,
So. Oh, the campaign against anti-Semitism are hard on his case. So is they're also after Ike. So a friend gave me a copy of the Hope Not Hate magazine. There, and it's just, it could be called the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. Is David Icke Britain's leading anti-Semite? I get a mention as, it's just the same. And that's why the system still holds up, because they have different political agendas, Hope Not Hate and Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. But when it comes to, you know, fighting dissidents like us, fighting revisionism, fighting the far right, whatever you want to call it, then they join together. They forget about their and they join together and they unite. We've seen now, haven't we, you know, this Unite Against Fascism. Even David Cameron was a member of Unite Against Fascism. Can you believe it? But he was. He might still be a fully paid up member of Unite Against Fascism. it's quite extraordinary. But yeah, they're all, but that's another Hope Not Hate, another Zionist front. You know, you can deny any Holocaust you like. You can absolutely deny the NAPCA. Hope Not Hate are not gonna jump and throw their toys out of the pram for that. But as soon as you start questioning the Shoah, then oh dear, they call me, what's a Holocaust denier with a guitar. I'm playing in Blackpool next weekend. They say
wonderful.
There'll be a Holocaust denier with a guitar. That's not true. I'm taking my keyboard.
Isn't it great publicity, though, Alison? Isn't it great?
Yes.
It's a wonderful job. I'm retired 4 years now. I speak to musicians of my age who've retired. I say, do you miss it? They say, no, I don't miss it. They say, do you miss it? I said, awfully. I miss it terribly. It's a wonderful way to go to work, and how many people have the opportunity to go to work and leave work to a round of applause? You know, it's a great job. I love the hours.
Yes, if my accusers had left me alone, then I'd be on a ship playing music. Mm. But as it is, they didn't leave me alone, and I'm still playing music, and I have an audience that, you know, very few YouTubers or you know, open micers could ever dream of. Mm. So what more could any artist want? And it's not only because of, you know, I can play a bit and sing a bit. I'm not too bad at it, you know. I went to college and studied, and that's what I'm trained to do. But it's for a political cause which is close to my heart, and that's, I don't know. I think it's when you provoke strong reactions. You know, if you look at this, there's loads of mirrors of survivors still up on YouTube. When you look at the comments, there's one on the Kodo video channel I saw, and you look at the comments. You know, there's the odd, you know, predictable comment about my physique, or you know, that I can't sing or whatever, but the vast majority of comments are highly favorable, highly complimentary, and just think, yes, thank you. You know, I'm so, just when any artist provokes that range of reaction, then I think your job's done.
Absolutely.
Everybody loves Ricky Gervais, or everybody loves, I don't know, I don't listen to pop music anymore, but everybody loves, I don't know, Beyoncé or somebody like that. Everybody loves her. Ah, the mainstream. Here's another platform for you. You can sell all your CDs, and here's a video. But let's provoke a reaction. Let's do some real art and provoke.
I think you made a very good
into thinking.
I think you made a very good point earlier, Alison, which I strongly agree with, that these people are teachers at all levels. You know, when you go to school, you don't finish with the same teacher you started with. You need teachers all along the way to take you through the different stages. And Gilad will take you through one stage. And I started with Alex Jones. I didn't stay long, but I started there. I've enjoyed the work of David Icke. I don't want anything said about him. I don't care if he sees lizards and you don't agree with that. It's the information he's given. That's what counts. Not the bits that you don't agree with. It's the information you're given. Take that and move on. And that's what you do. I don't listen to David Icke anymore. I just don't. It's not my thing. But yes, these people are... I don't criticise anyone on our side. And I'd like to see 2018 to be the year of unity.
I would like that very much too. I think that our problem is that we tend to, you know, have this bubble. We're not given any major platforms, so to speak, of when the media speaks about us, it's always, you know, in negative terms: vile Holocaust denier, neo-Nazi, blah blah blah. we tend to get immersed in our own little bubble, and because we don't have a voice, so to speak, in the wide world, the wider media community, we tend to kind of recoil on ourselves and get into this infighting, which has been the bane of patriotic movements for years, ever since they started to, you know, formulate. The National Front had great success in the late 60s, early 70s. That was quashed. The same with the BNP, you know, have had great success. Two MEPs in the 80s, that got quashed. The UKIP came along. I mean, UKIP, they've... What can we say? And all we have left now are that, you know, we have Labour and the Conservatives, and I really just don't see any difference at all between them. No. Maybe we were better off under Labour. I think, you know, in general, the population as a whole, you know, despite all of Tony Blair's evil dealings. Even he's coming round. You know, he said that we shouldn't have. He said quite recently that we shouldn't have, with the international community, that we shouldn't have declared Hamas a terrorist organization and boycott. We shouldn't have boycotted Hamas back when they were voted in 2006, I think. It's 2006. They were voted in the elections, and they were declared a terrorist organization to be boycotted, and sanctions. Those sanctions are still in place. You know, which have, you know, clearly assisted Israel and assisted in the further persecution of the Palestinians, and we're all Palestinians now. This is the UK, and the same thing is happening. You know, we've got a police state, we've got the agents of the state, the Hope Not Hate, the campaigns against anti-Semitism, the Israel lobby, all dealing. What has happened to our democracy? There must be some figures high up within the British aristocracy who are against this and who see what's happening.
You would
and
think
must
so.
Be very unhappy about it. There must be. They can't all be as corrupt as they appear.
Well, I think Breiser can verify that with Breiser is fighting to keep his house, and he goes to an organization called The Hub, which helps people that are struggling and fighting for to save their homes, to save having a roof over their head. And I believe, I hope this is okay to say live on air, Bri, I believe there's people in The Hub getting information from inside, from the top guys, yeah?
Yeah, there is, yeah.
So
this is what I've been told. And there's people who are within the establishment who are actually feeding back information because they know what's happening is wrong.
Hmm. Yeah.
So this is just people. About evictions. This is not about the greater, you know, the bigger political picture. This is just about keeping people in their homes and how people can stand up and fight back. You know, just giving us inside information, which is vital, because we don't know. We're ignorant to a lot of this stuff, sadly, but that's the way it is. And so we'll take that information and we'll run with it. And it's kind of working because we're hitting back now, and they don't like it. They don't like it.
I think this. No. I think your case, Alison, is going to be a milestone. I really do. I think this is a milestone. There are too many revisionist people around now. The support, how much support we get. We're gonna really push this right across all the shows, all the people that we know, the radio shows, the radio hosts that we're in contact with. We're going to push this to get people to turn up on March the 7th. Where is it to?
So it's at Westminster Magistrates Court, which is in Marylebone Road.
Okay.
In the centre of London, the nearest, I think Edgware Road is the nearest tube station, and also Marylebone Station.
Cool. Well, let's give them a show, nearest. Eh? Let's give them a gig they'll never forget, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get down there and let's get our support out to Alison. I'll be doing my little bit as well, but I will definitely be there unless they take me out before. But hey, you take me out in Cornwall, pal, you'll set grass fires all over this country. You take me out. But if you want to come and fight with me, Mr. Jewman, you want to come and fight with me, bring it on. I'm ready for you. I'm ready for you. And we all are now. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it.
Enough.
I've just had a guts full of this garbage. It, you know... parking tickets, you know. Oh, well, a machine saw you going too fast. Was anyone hurt? No.
No.
You know? Sorry. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Edits up.
But, yeah, I mean, what we're doing is just, we're doing the right thing. We're on the high moral ground here. We are, you know, we are speaking our truths, and that's it. And they cannot fight that. And to use comedy like Alison is using there, you know, they can't deal with that.
No.
They cannot deal with it. They just don't know what to do. They're, and the best they can do is try and drag this poor lady into court and try and humiliate her and whatever. And she's standing up strong. She's got her supporters there. And yes, let's get 1,000 people outside our court. Let's see what happens then. Let's see the BBC. You know, we can go and talk to the BBC reporters and talk to them and say, well, what do you think?
And we'll film them.
They sent to Martin Bashir to report on my case. He's the guy who interviewed Princess Diana.
Wow.
He interviewed Michael Jackson. You know, both. He rang me up and said, would you like an interview? I said, no. I'm not speaking to the mainstream. Well. Not even.
Everyone who speaks to you ends up dead,
twice,
pal.
Not twice, but thrice. You know, Diana's dead, says Michael Jackson. No thanks.
You don't want to be talking to the British Bolshevik Corporation. I mean, I wouldn't go near either. If mainstream media came to me, I wouldn't go near them.
No, would speak to them.
I mean, why not? And I did actually do it last year. They were going to do a RTE, which is the main station here, which is very much like the BBC, exactly the same, actually. And they wanted to talk about, you know, the whole eviction crisis, homelessness and all that. And they came to my house and they were very pleasant, very nice. I woke them up to quite a few things, by the way. And they interviewed me and they said, okay, in a month's time, we'll let you know and whatever. And the day before the show was to be put on the TV, they called me up and they said, sorry, but we're not going to include you in this documentary. Because I was going against the grain, you know. I was telling people, you know, get into the court by yourself. Forget about lawyers and stuff because they're not going to help you. Forget about these government agencies who are there to supposedly help you, who'll just drag you down another alleyway and feck you up another way, you know what I mean? And, yeah, they weren't going to put it up. And I kind of knew that. I was half expecting that. So that was my experience of mainstream. So never again, ever again. No way if I go near them. Because they'll twist it and they'll turn it, or they just won't put you on. It's simple as that.
Most of the press claimed that I was singing along to my songs in court or mouthing the words.
Yes, I read that. Yeah. Well, it was strange because, as I said, I've been following your case with great interest. And I thought, oh, Alice, it's in court tomorrow. And then we got the report on the first day on Facebook. I think you put something up there, or I read it somewhere. And then it went dead over the weekend. And I thought, what's on? What's going on? I think it was about Monday or Tuesday before I found out that it actually had been adjourned. So you went in for one day, and then you did go back the second day, Alison, but No.
The trial was scheduled for a day only.
Right.
The prosecution had said during all the previous hearings, we only need a day. It should have been, you know, they should have got their act together, because on Wednesday morning of the trial, the 10th of January, the prosecution then said, no, we need more time. But I think they realised that, they needed an adjournment, because it's unheard of. It really, even a parking, you know, parking crime, you have a trial that goes on for more than a day.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously they don't really seem to know what they're doing.
No.
With this trial, it'll been going on for 18 months by the time part two comes along, and they've still not managed to get a conviction.
Incredible.
So justice delayed is also justice denied. Lots of people, you could see, and the contempt of court, possibilities of contempt of court. Why in the middle of the trial were there all these press articles, and why were there comments open on the Daily Mail? Oh, Russia Today is one thing, but the Daily Mail is, you know, a British newspaper. Why did they leave the comments open? Mm-hmm. Perhaps it was to test the waters. You know, I often wonder this, to see what the general public think about this affair, mm-hmm. and will that have an effect? But
realistically,
it could prejudice my case. You know, trial by media.
I think they want to keep the comments section open so they can get these horrible, angry neo-Nazis in to go, you know, F the Jews and all this type of stuff. That's what they want to hear. They want to see
but
that.
They were moderated. They were pre-moderated. So all that kind of thing would have been probably...
I wouldn't say they would moderate that.
It did say perhaps not. I didn't read them all. I didn't wade through 1,000+ comments. But I noticed that the arrows were, you know, that there was a lot of dissent on the arrows for negative comments. Saying, you know, free speech should be restricted because this there's a lot of support. I would say the arrows. The red arrows and the green arrows show that we're winning, you know, despite the content of the comments. And certainly the comments on the Russia Today piece, the RT.com, they were all very much in favour of freedom of expression. Even negative articles, there was a piece by a guy called O'Doherty in the Irish Independent, calling me an anti-Semitic loon and a nutter, and but still advocating for freedom of speech. So... you know, that's the thing here. Yeah, we must have the right to offend people. It's subjective. We can't be having court cases because somebody's feelings were hurt. Goodness me.
Yeah.
You know? My first question is, why can you say what you want about us, but we can't say nothing about you? What's your problem?
Yeah.
It's that simple. And, you know, all you really need to do is be able to understand that.
Yeah. Do you believe in freedom of expression?
Well, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I do. No one comes between me and my creator. No one.
It's the first of our freedoms. Everything hangs on that. The right to be able to think and express those thoughts.
Yes.
It's the most important.
We're too smart for them, Alison. We're too smart for them. They've been kicked out of 109, 110 or whatever. It keeps going up, that number. 200, that keeps going up. That's up to about 210 now, as they find more and more. They go on about that. Why is that? And of course, back in those days when they were kicked out, there is no internet. So when we catch them this time, the world catches them. Where are we going to put them? We'll find somewhere. But they should never be allowed in places of power ever again. Ever.
And they shouldn't be allowed to control the media. They just shouldn't be allowed. Say whatever they want.
They shouldn't be allowed in any places of power at all. Money, banking, finance, government, local government, get out. You're not trustworthy. Get out. You're finished.
Yeah.
And we're coming after you, and we'll keep coming after you until we get you. We're too bloody smart for you, Jew. We're too smart. Actually, we are sort of... run a little bit over, Alison, but it's been fantastic having you on. I've really enjoyed it. It's a pleasure to talk with you. I thank you again on behalf of all the listeners and everyone out there listening, and I'm sure around the world, the female Arthur Topham, ladies and gentlemen. God bless him.
The female Ernst Sundel.
Exactly. God bless him. God bless him.
Yeah, I mean... it's brilliant what you're doing, Alison. It's just fantastic.
Thank you.
And you just went out there, did a couple of YouTube videos, and now they've hauled you. You're in front of the media now, and you know, and you're standing up strong. You're just saying, enough of this nonsense, please. You know,
crap.
I didn't offend you. You know, and it's wonderful. It's brilliant. This is what we need. More people doing stuff, hitting back, using comedy. Using comedy.
Well, you know, Graham said to me yesterday that he'd listened to an old interview. I think it was the very first interview I ever did, in fact, with Ognir.
Yes.
And, you know, we still chat. And I remember ages ago, it must have been, you know, just slightly after this first interview I did, I said, you know, why are they doing this to me? And he said, they're building you up to be the next big Holocaust denier.
So there you go.
What Price has just said kind of confirms that, and all the media coverage, because there was nothing. There was one article in the Daily Mail, I think, after my first hearing in December 2016, but nothing since. You know, I've been to court countless times, but there was nothing. But there they were, all these cameras outside court when I arrived. So I put on my brave face and yes, we together stand strong.
We do indeed.
Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you both. Very enjoyable. The time has flown by.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Hello to everyone in the chat room. Yes, of course, I'm in favour of Brexit. Of course, I just saw that question.
Thank you
very much for everybody's wishes, and thank you for your support, and hope to see as many people as possible on the 7th of March. It starts at 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock would be there at 9:30. There's a security check as you go in court.
Oh, wow.
There'll be all the cameras. If you're afraid of being recognised, wear a hat and a pair of sunglasses.
Or a balaclava.
Balaclava.
Yes.
Don't talk to me about a balaclava. I was featured.
I'll put on my one and I'll say, an IRA man has just walked in here. Yeah. Oh, there we go. Yeah.
I was allegedly featured on the front page of The Sun in a balaclava. And they said, I said, we have reason to suspect this is you. And I just laughed, you know. I said, where can you see me? I was warned.
The balaclava is you.
The balaclava is me. So, But yes,
that makes sense.
But, you know, like I said, when this is all done, Alison, you can pick up some nice cash. If I knew what I know then, I got them for $3,000. I took them for $3,000 on my own. I just said, I'm not having this. And if we go to court, this is going to cost you a lot more than that. And they realized it would, because they broke every rule in the book. They broke every rule in the book with you. So charge them, you know, you do an hour gig. That's at least 150 quid, I think, is worth an hour. And you could be gigging 24 hours a day with the right drugs. So there's a lot of money coming your way. Take them. Don't let them get away with it.
I don't like taking fiat Jew currency, you know.
Pay me in Bitcoin.
I mean, it's good that you can get some kind of restitution, you know. But Alison's up to you, obviously, what you want to do.
Yes, I'd
if you did sue them and you got something out of it.
I just wanted to show them that I wouldn't go and take no shit. That's all it was. If you want to come and mess with me again, come again. But you know, I'm not sitting on this. You know, you're not going to push me around and then expect me to just sit back and do nothing about it, because I won't have it. That's why I say it. It's not so much as the money. It's go after them. They've been after you. Go and get something that buys you a few good holidays. You know, God bless you, Alison.
Yeah.
We support you 100%. Everyone out there supports you 100%. Would you like to give it any web details or where people can find any of your work, Alison?
The best place is my blog. It's got everything on there, including a donate button, which is alisonchablot.wordpress.com.
Brilliant.
Okay.
And thanks to everyone. Thanks. I see there's another message from George. There's no Shetland muscles. Yes, I was struck with food poisoning. Luckily, on the night of the trial,
we went to the pub and I
threw up twice in this pub.
These
Shetland mussels. Obviously, one of them wasn't particularly fresh.
I was confused because I didn't know what caused you to go sick. I didn't know if it was the mussels or whether it was your high heels. Because you mentioned your high heels as well.
Wasn't fresh.
I threw up over these shoes, but they're not ruined, thankfully.
They weren't fresh Israeli mussels, no?
No, they were Shetland. You only need one, you know. And I'd cooked a kilo on the Monday night, and I'd eaten half and put the rest in the fridge and had the other half. So it was unfortunate, but at least I didn't throw up in the dock. No, it wouldn't have looked good after my songs being broadcast that I throw up after the broadcasting of my songs, would it? But well done to the bar staff for cleaning up and looking after me, and then I was ushered into a taxi. Yes.
Why was I sick in the dock? Because you made me. And on that note, look, folks, we will leave it. Thank you, everyone in the chat room. I rarely get a chance to mention you people. Thank you so much for supporting us. We do really appreciate it. And thank you also to the people that send emails, your kind emails and little things that Bryzer and myself get sent. We do appreciate it. If you do want to email me on anything, are there any notes you want, I can pass over. It's thegrahamhartshow@mail.com. That's thegrahamhartshow@mail.com. And thank you, Alison. so much for being my guest. It's our guest, I should say. It's been an absolute pleasure. And we'll see you again next week, folks. And look forward to another show.
And I'll just
show.
Say, Graham, let's stand up for Alison, 7th of March. And we'll stand up for Monica as well. Two brilliant, wonderful, brave women. Okay?
Absolutely.
Stand behind them all the way. They need this. And they'll get strength from it. So that's it.
I can't follow that. Well said, Breiser. Good night, folks. Yeah. Catch you next week.
Goyam.